This shiur is dedicated Le'ilu Nishmas Imi Mayrasi Bela Dereja Bas Baruch Halevi Aleho HaShalom, my mother Midi Levine Yafi, who was Niftara on the 5th of Shvat, 5758, 26 years ago. A woman who transformed her home into a very special place every seventh day for over half of a lifetime. Good day, Rabbi Isai. My name is Barry Yaffe, and I want to welcome you to today's shiur. This is being dictated in Parshas Bo, but I'm going to talk about something that actually relates to next week's Parsha, Bishalach, and the Parsha after that, Yisrael. The reason for that is because my mother was Niftara in the week of Parshas Bishalach, 26 years ago, so we're going to use that as a jumping-off point for today's shiur. The truth is, this year is actually more relevant for the first Shabbos of the year, so if you find merit in it, please feel free to go back and listen to it after Simchas Torah. The reason for why I am bringing it up now is because it was in Parshas Bishalach that all of Klal Yisrael was first introduced to the laws of Shabbos. Rabbi Isai, as with most of my shiurim, there is an attached text document, which is a source sheet for all of the sources that I will quote in this talk. So in Parshas Bishalach, when Klal Yisrael had exited Mitzrayim and were making a rest stop in a place called Mara, so there the pasuk says, Vayitzak el Hashem vayorehu Hashem eitz vayashlech el hamayim vayimtiku hamayim shom sam lo chok u'mishpat v'sham nisahu. There was no potable water at Marah. They cried out to Hashem, and Hashem showed Moshe a tree or a piece of wood to throw into the water and sweeten the waters. And there Hashem placed for Klal Yisrael chok u'mishpat, statutes and judgments. So on that phrase, Chok U'Mishpat, Rashi quotes a Gemara from Sanhedrin, I think it's also a Mechilta, that in Mara there were three parshias of the Torah that were first introduced to the Jewish people as a whole so that they should become engrossed in them. And those three parshias were Shabbos, Parah Aduma, the red heifer, and the concept that they needed to establish courts, just courts. But here Klal Yisrael is introduced to the laws of Shabbos, and indeed this has relevance because the next Parsha in Parshas Bishalach is the Parsha of the Mun, and of course the Mun did not come down on the Shabbos day. That harkens back to the Pasuk in Bereishis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed the Shabbos day. Rashi brings a Medrash that the day was blessed with the absence of Mun, and a double portion of Mun on Friday. So that brief and kind of sneaky introduction reorients us from the first Shabbos of Klal Yisrael to the very first Shabbos of creation, all the way back at the beginning of Bereishis, which is where we need to be for this year. What I want to start off with is an Or HaChaim in Perek Beis of Bereishis, which is quoted in the source sheet, which to me introduced a very novel aspect to the Shabbos day. I am used to thinking about Shabbos as Yom HaShvi'i, as the very end of the week of creation and the pinnacle of creation, the most important part of creation that all of creation was leading up to. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh, he introduces a novel view of Shabbos that I had not really considered before viewing his commentary. In it, he makes the point that Shabbos is not only the pinnacle of the week that was, but it actually is the source and the wellspring for the week that will be. So he establishes Shabbos as a connector between the previous week and the coming week. And he does so in a very interesting fashion. It is a parish that is on the second pasuk of the second parak. This Or HaChaim is not actually necessary for the Chiddush that I myself want to introduce to you, but it serves as, I think, a very fitting introduction to that Chiddush, because it was a comment that I made to myself after seeing the Or HaChaim that ultimately led to the Chiddush that I want to discuss. The relevant portions of the Or HaChaim are in the source sheet. I'm not going to read it word for word, but I do want to be true to the nuances of his words. So I'll try to translate as best as I can. By way of introduction, he notes that the pasuk says, "Uvayom hashvi shavas vayinafash," and in the seventh day, Hashem rested and vayinafash, usually translated as and was refreshed, but it actually comes from the word nefesh. He received, it's in the passive, vayinafash, he received soul. So Hashem became souled, and by extension, the Or HaChaim says the entire universe gained a soul, something that he calls the nefesh ha'olam, the soul of the universe, the soul of the of existence, the soul of the world. And he says that it is this ability of Shabbos to provide nefesh, to provide soul, that actually gave the world endurance. He quotes from a Gemara in Chagiga that we're going to come back to later. Ki ha'olam haya rofeif v'roed, that the universe was on shaky ground and trembling. Ad shabo Shabbos, until Shabbos came, v'niskayem ha'olam v'nisyased, and allowed the universe to endure, and it gave it foundation. It became foundation, became founded. That seems to be the koach, the strength of Shabbos, is that it provides endurance for the world. He further states that in the absence of Shabbos, and just within the first 6 days of creation, what the world lacked was a davar hama'amid, a sustaining factor. And it was the essence of Shabbos that allowed for the universe to become sustained. Sort of like the makeh b'patish of creation, the final finishing stroke of creation. So it's not exactly a new bria, but it is the finishing off of the previously established bria. The next pasuk is Vayavarech Elokim es Yom HaShvi'i, and the Lord blessed the seventh day. Again, Rashi brings the medrash that this refers in the future to the man. Vayikadesh oso, and he made it holy, ki vo shavas mikol melachto, because in it he rested from all of his work, melachto, asher bara Elokim l'asos, which the Lord created to do. Actually a hard pasuk to translate. Kivo Shavas, because in it Hashem rested. So here's where the Or HaChaim gets to the meat of the matter. He says in no uncertain terms, when we say in Kiddush, actually, what was first told to us in the Ten Commandments, Ki sheshesh yomim asa Hashem es ha-shemayim v'yesa oretz es hayom v'yes kol asher bom v'yonach b'yom ha-shvi'i al kein beruch Hashem es yom ha-shabbos v'yikadoshehu. He says that, by and large, we all translate it incorrectly. Read the pasuk as it is written. Ki sheshesh yomim, for 6 days. We usually translate it as for in 6 days. We put the preposition in. But it's not there. Ki sheshesh yomim, for 6 days, asa Hashem made, es ha-shamayim v'es ha-aretz, the heavens and the earth, es hayom v'es kol asher bom, and the sea and all that was within them, vayonach b'yom ha-shvi'i, and he rested on the seventh day, al kein beruch Hashem es yom ha-shabbos v'yikadoshehu. Therefore, Hashem blessed the Shabbos day and made it holy. But he says that's the correct way to read it. Don't read it in 6 days. The Chumash doesn't say that. The Chumash says 6 days Hashem created. He says take that literally. For reasons of his own, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent to create a universe that would endure exactly 6 days. It was to be a 6-day wonder. And at the end of 6 days, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kaviyachol intent to stop creating. And when he stopped pouring his creative forces into the universe, then the universe would implode and go back to tohu vavohu, to nothingness. So the entire world was supposed to last for 6 days. But that didn't happen. And he says the reason why it didn't happen is because after that 6 days came Shabbos. And it was the essence of Shabbos that allowed for the universe to renew itself. So in essence, he doesn't say this, but the way I would look at it is he looks at Shabbos as if Shabbos were a lens that focuses the creative 6-day force that Hashem put into the universe and focuses it into the next week. It recharges the batteries of the universe so that the universe now has enough oomph to last for another 6 days. And he further says, quite explicitly, that that is exactly what happens from week to week. Every Friday afternoon, Bein Hashmashos, as the sun is setting, the universe totters on the brink of extinction. But it doesn't quite make it, because as soon as the sun sets, it's Shabbos. And it's the Koach of Shabbos that provides new soul, a refocusing of that prior energy into the week that will be. So the universe limps from Friday afternoon to Friday afternoon, barely makes it, and comes Shabbos to the rescue every single week. He says that explicitly. That's an astonishing way of looking at Shabbos. And to me, it came as a huge surprise. Again, I've always viewed Shabbos as the pinnacle of creation, and yet he is looking at it as, no, it is actually the beginning of the week to be. And without it, that week would never be. And the universe would crumble into nothingness. Astonishing. Now, considering where he is saying this, on that first week of creation, my comment at the end of his words were, how sad for that first week. That first week did not have a preceding Shabbos. Only the second week and every week thereafter. But that first week there was no preceding Shabbos. How sad for that week. And that comment sort of stayed with me. I didn't make a whole lot of it, but that was what I thought. His intent was obvious. That first week did not need a preceding Shabbos because it had the creative forces of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself providing the energy for the universe. But nevertheless, how sad for that first week. And that's where I left it for many moons. At some point in time after that, I started wondering something that the Mishnah on that Gemara in Chagiga that the Ohr HaChaim brought, that the Mishnah tells you don't do. I started wondering, you know, before Bereishis Bara Elokim, what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing? The Mishnah says, don't go there. But it says it in a rather peculiar fashion. Says the Mishnah in Chagiga 11b, Ein darshin ba'arayas v'shlosha. One is not permitted to darshin, to expound on the psukim, and to relate how the psukim ultimately become halacha, ba'arayas v'shlosha, regarding the sexual prohibitions in front of three people, v'lo b'ma'asa b'reishis b'shnayim, and one is not permitted to expound on the psukim of the work of the creation in front of two people, v'lo b'merkava b'yachid, and one is not permitted to expound on the ma'asa merkava, the vision of the divine chariot, which has all sorts of Kabbalistic understandings to it. It actually forms part of our three times daily Kedusha, but nevertheless, the hidden meanings are not to be expounded even in front of a single individual. Ella im kein hayochachem, unless this person was a wise man, umeven midaito, and really he could have understood it from his own intellect. And then the Mishnah goes further to say, kol ha-mistakel ba-arba devarim, anybody who spends time looking at these four things, rasi lo, ki'ilu lo ba-lo-olam, or shalo ba-lo-olam. It is literally a mercy had he never come into the world. There's another gerse in the Mishnah of ro'i lo, ki'ilu lo ba-lo-olam. It would be more appropriate had he never come into the world. So what are these four things that it would be a pity to focus on? Mala mala, what is above? Mala mata, what is below? Which is generally understood as what is above the earth, what is below the earth. Malifnim, what was before creation, Bereishis Bara Elokim. Umala echor, and what will be after the end of days. And then the Mishnah goes on to another topic. So the Mishnah states unequivocally that there are a number of things that are usur to do in front of a sizable audience. And then it goes on to say, better that you wouldn't come into the world if you start wondering what was before creation. It doesn't say not to do it. It just says it would be a mercy that you had not come into the world if that's what you start paying attention to. So it seems to me that the Mishnah is not telling me that this is usur. It seems to me that the Mishnah is simply giving me good advice. Don't go there. because it's a useless exercise. Whatever the state of existence was before the physical universe was created, before Bereshis Bara Elohim, it's not something that you've ever been exposed to in this universe. You have no relationship to it, and you're not going to get your puny little head around it. It's just a waste of time, and if you persist, it's going to drive you crazy. Don't do that. So, at some point, I started doing exactly what the Mishnah cautioned against and began questioning, what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing before Bereshis Bara Elohim? Now, when you phrase the question that way, of course, it is not even a single, it's a double paradox. The question does not make sense. You can't do anything when there is no physical universe, no universe of ma'aseh, of action, of doing. So, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not doing something in a physical sense without the creation of a physical universe, nor did time exist before the creation of the universe. So you can't use words like before or when or any referent to a timestamp. Space-time is one continuum of the physical universe, and before Bereshis Bara Elohim, space did not exist, time did not exist, there was no matter, energy, gravity, quarks, nothing. Except HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Torah, which in some Kabbalistic fashion that I don't claim to understand, are one and the same, and they existed on some sort of a different plane, a different dimension than anything a human being has experience with. Perhaps some sort of a universe of makshava, of thought. Impossible to know. Now, I am aware that there is a Bereshis Rabbah that is included within the source sheet that states that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created worlds and destroyed them before he finally settled upon the creation of this universe. So you could say, well, gee, he was perhaps constantly creating and destroying, and finally decided to stick with this one. But in a way, that just sort of begs the question. And before that, what was he doing, or what was occupying his essence? Impossible to say. So very quickly, I decided that the Mishnah was giving me very good advice indeed, and that this was not a constructive avenue of investigation. Nevertheless, I was still intrigued by the question, so I decided to turn it around, and perhaps I could get a conceptual answer to the negative of the way that I had initially phrased it. I decided it didn't make sense to ask what Hashem was doing, so to speak, but I concluded that perhaps I could state with some confidence what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not doing before Bereshis Bara Elohim. And that's based on a very simple understanding of the Pesukim that we've already quoted. I concluded that if there was a definite beginning to the process of creation, then before Hashem began creating, before Bereshis Bara Elohim, whether it was this universe or other universes, before that state of affairs, what Hashem was not doing is that he was not creating. That's a tautology. By definition, before Hashem began creating, he was not creating. And as we've already quoted from Perek Beis, Vayichulu Hashem Avroarts v'chol tziva'am, Vayichal Elokim b'yom ha-shvi'i melachto asher asa, Vayishpos b'yom ha-shvi'i mikol melachto asher asa. Hashem finished the work of creation on the seventh day. His melachto, right? The work of creation is called Hashem's melacha. Well, when I am being mindful of the Shabbos, what I am doing is I am avoiding what Chazal call melacha, creative work, exactly the same as Hashem's creative work. So when I am avoiding melacha, I am in a state of Shabbos. If Hashem was not creating, then he was not doing his melacha, and therefore it follows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu existed in a state of Shabbos, of a state of rest. Ah, that's a very interesting concept. If that is correct, then it turns out that my comment about that first week, how sad for that first week that there was no Shabbos that existed before that first week, that comment was an error. There was a Shabbos before that first week. but it's a Shabbos that you and I can know nothing about. It's a Shabbos that is qualitatively different than any Shabbos we've ever experienced. It's a Shabbos that is obligate because there is no possibility of doing malacha when there is no universe of doing, no universe of maaseh. It's impossible. Okay. Before Bereshis Bara Elohim, at some point HaKadosh Baruch Hu existed in a state of total inertia, because doing something was inconceivable, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu conceived of it while he was in that state. And without any sort of a pre-existing template for what the concept of doing was, meant, could be possible. Fascinating. I think it's worth a few moments of conjecture to try to understand what we might postulate about that state of existence and what is totally incomprehensible to our ability to conceive. So this was a different kind of Shabbos than the Shabbos that we experience in our universe of Maaseh. It was an all-pervasive, sublime kind of Shabbos, because without a universe of Maaseh, it is not conceivable of how one could do something, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was, to borrow a phrase from the end of the Shabbos Musaf Davening, a Yom Shekulo Shabbos, a day that was entirely composed of Shabbos, wherein the essence of the day was nothing but rest. A day for a timeless eternity in a place that does not exist, at least not in this universe. Even the Malachim don't perceive where that place was. In our Musaf Kedusha, we understand the Malachim are asking, Aye Mikom Kevodo, where is this place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides out in, his fortress of solitude, to borrow a phrase from the comic books? They don't know. It's a place that is known only to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a place that is nowhere. It is a Shabbos that is all-encompassing, a state that surrounds HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a skin, maybe a state that is inseparable from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, part of his essential essence, kaviyachol. It is the default state of God, in a way. Before HaKadosh Baruch Hu was master of the universe, Ribono Shel Olam, he was Ribono Shel Shabbos. He was a master of total rest, complete inertness. Perhaps another way of looking at it is that as far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu was concerned, it was home. And as to what he was doing in that Shabbos, presumably he was planning things out. There are midrashim that clearly state that prior to beginning the process of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had mapped out the entire future of the universe that he was to construct, and the entire future of every atom within that universe. That had to have been done in that state of his Yom Shekulo Shabbos. A place of total machshava with a complete absence of ma'aseh. We say in Lecha Dodi about Shabbos, sof ma'aseh b'machshava techila. To perhaps give a novel understanding to that line, the Shabbos that we experience was the end of the acts of ma'aseh, sof ma'aseh. So it was the last thing in the world of ma'aseh, but b'machshava techila, in the world of machshava, it preceded everything else. Perhaps. If indeed this Yom Shekulo Shabbos that we have postulated did exist, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu presumably was present in this Yom Shekulo Shabbos, was planning the universe that he would construct, and at some point he decided to make Havdalah from his Yom Shekulo Shabbos. I wish I could find a medrash that states the following scenario. I can't, but in my imagination, I can envision the following. We are told in Tereshu Baal Peh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exhibits behaviors for mitzvahs that we ourselves are commanded to do, sort of a divine template that we can copy. So, for instance, we're told that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol davens, he wraps himself in a talis, and when I daven, I am misatef in my talis. I wrap myself in my talis. We are told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin, and I am commanded to wear tefillin. In my tefillin, the Pesukim extol the uniqueness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is the essence of oneness, of unity. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin, we are told, he extols the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael. Mi ka'amcha ki Yisrael, goy echad ba'aretz. Who is like your nation, like Israel, one singular nation in the land. So what I can envision in my imagination is the process of Havdalah. When I make Havdalah, I light a candle. I perform a melacha to signify the end of Shabbos, and I say, Baruch HaMavdil Ben Kodesh L'Chol, blessed be he who divides between the holy of Shabbos and the profane of the rest of the week. In making this Havdalah from his Yom Shekulo Shabbos, I can just envision HaKadosh Baruch Hu lighting his fire, performing a melacha, and I can hear a voice ringing out over the tohu vavohu. Baruch Shayavdilu Ben Kodesh L'chol. Blessed be those who will divide between the holy and the profane. Blessed be my holy people who will make a Havdalah from Shabbos. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu lights his candle. I light a candle of wax. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's candle from that Yom Shekulo Shabbos was nothing less than the Big Bang itself. An infusion of raw energy of immense magnitude, unimaginable magnitude, from that other place, from Hashem's Mekom Kevodo, into this universe that is so powerful that it rips the fabric of nothingness, and as it expands, leaves in its wake somethingness, Yesh Me'ayin. An infusion that starts out infinitesimally small, but infinitesimally hot. More energy than this universe has ever seen. Pure, raw plasma, the physical correlate of the arbracious that Chazal talk about, the light that is hidden away for tzaddikim in the world to come. An inferno that is so incredibly hot that matter of any kind cannot exist within it, but then as it expands with breathtaking speed, it cools, and as it cools, finally subatomic particles can form. Electrons, neutrons, protons, which associate and become atoms, which further associate and become atoms of increasing complexity, and then molecules, and ultimately lead to the birth of planets and stars. A trillion galaxies, each one containing 100 billion stars and uncounted planets. And in one moderate-sized galaxy, near one edge of the galaxy, he forms the earth with its sun, the Shemesh. And on this earth Hashem plants life. Firstly plant life, then the lower forms of animal life, and finally man himself, and breathes into man a nishmas chayim. All of that, if we are correct in our presumption, all of that came from Hashem's Havdalah candle. From that Yom Shekulo Shabbos, can you imagine the awesomeness and the majesty of that Yom Shekulo Shabbos itself? Everything in this universe came from that preceding Shabbos. So, Rabbeisai, I've painted a rather peculiar amalgam of a mixture of science fiction, and religion. Is it true? I can't find any source from within Chazal. And if you can find a source, please, please let me know. But the idea, the concept, appeals to me on a number of levels. Let's talk about the implications. Firstly, this concept establishes what I call the cyclicality of existence woven into reality. And it does that through the agency of Shabbos itself. I understand from the davening and elsewhere that at the end of time there will be a Yom Shekulo Shabbos, a day that is a complete Shabbos. Everything about that day is a reflection of Shabbos, and I find it strangely comforting that the entire universe came into being also from a Yom Shekulo Shabbos. There is a cyclicity to all of history and future destiny. Moreover, there's also a cyclicity within each individual week. If the hypothesis is correct, HaKadosh Baruch Hu started from a place of Yom Shekulo Shabbos, a place where ma'aseh, where action, was unheard of, impossible, and from that place he constructed a universe of ma'aseh, a universe of action, a happenin' place, where rest is impossible. And at the end of that process, after 6 days of ceaseless activity, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does what seems to be impossible. He reintroduces into this universe of ma'aseh, this universe of action, the concept of Shabbos itself. A faint memory, perhaps, of that Yom Shekulo Shabbos that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's alone. But nevertheless, he introduces that and he gives it to us, to Klal Yisrael, to remember and to guard. A precious gift, as the Gemara calls it. A taste of his Yom Shekulo Shabbos. That strikes me as a very Jewish concept. It seems to me that, for instance, the beginning of Koheles is all about the cyclicity of existence which is built into the world. That's number one. Number two, I believe it makes sense out of the Shabbos Musaf. As you know, the Korban Musaf, which is brought every Shabbos, is two sheep. We say it in the Musaf Davening, Uviyom HaShabbos Shnei Kvasim B'nei Shana Temimim U'Shnei Yesro Nimsa L'Smin Chablu Lav Hashem and V'Nisko. Right? We bring two sheep. That's the Musaf of Shabbos. If I were writing the Chumash, if I were writing it, knowing something about the Musafim of the other Moadim, the other holy days, I would not understand that Musaf in the slightest. I would say, what should be the Musaf of Shabbos? It's a no-brainer. It's slam dunk. It should be seven sheep. Shabbos is the seventh day, so the Musaf of Shabbos should be seven sheep, just like seven sheep forms the core Musaf of essentially all the other Moadim. But instead, it's not. It's two sheep. What is the logic of two sheep? Well, Rabbi Isai, the Korban Tamid that is brought daily also consists of two sheep. There's the Tamid Shel Shachris, the Tamid of the morning, and the Tamid Shel Beinu Arboyim, the Tamid of the afternoon. It is noteworthy that the Musaf of Shabbos is two additional sheep. In other words, it's double that of the days of the week, the Chol days. Well, if Shabbos actually harkens back to that Yom Shekulo Shabbos, that Yom Shekulo Shabbos is the Bechor amongst days. It is the first of all days. It is the day that preceded Bereishis. So if it's the Bechor, then it gets a double portion, Pishnayim. And so now the Korban makes sense. The Korban of a weekday is two sheep. The Korban of Shabbos, as the Bechor amongst days, is two additional sheep, Pishnayim. That makes sense. Thirdly, and this is something that's perhaps a bit more fanciful, it's a novel way of looking at the concepts of 7 and 8. The Maharal introduces us to the idea that in recognizing Hashem as the master of the physical universe because he created it, we recognize Hashem's mastery of the universe in sevens because he created the earth on 6 days and rested on the seventh. But things that are uniquely holy are eights. They are not sevens. They are lamaila min hateva. They are something that is higher than just the natural. They are the spiritual. So how does that work? Does he understand that, well, if seven represents the natural world, then something more than seven represents the spiritual world, and eight happens to be the next number that you run into when you count more than seven? Is it something as basic as that? Or maybe there's something a little more complex to the idea. Now, this Yom Shekulo Shabbos that I postulated is something that we don't know anything about. The Chumash doesn't tell us. The Chumash starts with Gracious Bara Elohim. It's none of our business, and if it existed, it certainly is a state of affairs that is beyond our comprehension. So we don't know anything about that Yom Shekulo Shabbos. So if I am looking at the natural world and saying, gee, this was created by Hashem, I look at the beginning of creation, Yom Echad, and I say, okay, that's the first day, just like the Chumash calls it. And then the second day of creation, that's day two. Third day is day three, and by the time I finish counting the sum total of the creative days, I count to seven. Now, take a look at it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers that Yom Shekulo Shabbos very well, if it exists the way we have postulated. That's his default state. He was Ribbono Shel Shabbos before he was Ribbono Shel Olam. So when he looks at the process of creation, he looks at that Yom Shekulo Shabbos, what we would call the zeroth day, and he says, wait a minute, that's my day one. That's when I was planning out this wonderful universe that I decided to create. And then, on the day of Bereishis Bara Elokim, what the Chumash calls Yom Echad, he would say, that's the second day. And so when HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts from the beginning to the end of the process, he counts not seven, but eight. So it turns out, if this hypothesis is correct, that seven and eight are exactly the same number. It just depends from whose perspective are you counting. If you're counting from the human perspective, you count seven and say, this belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you're counting from a divine perspective, you count eight and say that eights belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, that's very interesting, because the one mitzvah, which we say is Doche Shabbos, which pushes off the restrictions of Shabbos, is Bris Milah. So Bris Milah is an eight. That comes from a pasuk. It's Gzeres HaKosov. Uvayom Hashmini Yimal Besar Or Laso. The Torah tells us that we perform a Bris Milah on the eighth day, and we learn out even if it is Shabbos. But there would seem to be a contradiction, a stira, between the idea of not doing melacha on the seventh day and the idea that we do what otherwise would be forbidden, to cause a wound on Shabbos for Bris Milah Bismano in its appointed time. But if we understand that 7 and 8 are exactly the same number, it just depends on who's counting, that paints that whole scenario with a different complexion. Now it turns out that there is no contradiction between 7 and 8. 7, we look at 7 as a reflection that the entire physical world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the 8 of Bris Milah is no contradiction to that. This child now bears the brand of God in his flesh. And we are dedicating this child to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with his Bris Milah. It's a reinforcement of the same idea that everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there is no contradiction between the 8 of Bris Milah and the 7 of Shabbos. I'm not certain that that is a compelling analysis, but I find it appealing conceptually. So, Rabbi Isai, I started off with an Orach Chaim HaKodesh, which presents a novel view of Shabbos as the wellspring of the week to be by allowing for Hizchadshus, renewal of the creative powers of the week that was, and presented you with a pretty fanciful hypothesis of an invisible Yom Shekulo Shabbos that preceded the very week of the Bria as well, and as part of a continuum that is in line with the Or HaChaim's thesis. If anything in this presentation has given you a closer relationship to Shabbos, or has expanded your horizons with regard to Shabbos in a way that you did not previously have, I'd like to ask a favor. Please let me know. Write me at the email on my bio on OU.org and let me know that this gave you a refreshing appreciation for the beauty of the Shabbos day. If I get even one such reply, I will consider this a success. Before ending, let me present you with a mashal that emphasizes a different aspect of that Yom Shekulo Shabbos. Mushel is of a fabulously wealthy man who lived for many years in his condominium apartment deep in the heart of town near the financial district, where he had easy access to all of his affairs. He owned the entire building, of course, but his condominium occupied the top three floors. He lived there quite comfortably, in spite of the meagerness of the size of his apartments. He was quite happy with his quarters, except that they were not large enough to accommodate the large affairs that he sometimes had to host for his acquaintances, given the spheres that he moved in. So he conceived of the idea of building a summer home. Money was no object. He purchased 100,000 acres out in the country, over 150 square miles. And his mandate to the architects and the contractors were, build me a summer home like no one has ever seen. A mansion with hundreds of rooms, huge ballrooms, everything computerized, something right out of Star Trek. Terraform the surrounding terrain into multiple different environments. Anything you could imagine on the face of the earth, from parched sub-Saharan arid biomes to the frigid climes of Antarctica. Put in huge environmental hidden air conditioning equipment to maintain the environment. An underground maglev monorail system that would whisk his guests to any place on the property that they might want for their amusement. And it was quite an undertaking. Quite a challenge for the most skilled architects and contractors available. But in the end, he had something truly wondrous, the eighth wonder of the world, a technological marvel. When it was finished, of course, he staged a gala celebration and invited all of his acquaintances, who were duly impressed at the sumptuousness, the incredible sumptuousness of the entire estate and surroundings. But finally, the Chanukah Sabayis came to an end, and he bid farewell to his last guest, and then settled down into his vacation home for a well-deserved rest. But something was wrong. It just didn't fit. Here he was, all by his lonesome, rattling around in his huge mansion, and the feel was completely wrong. It didn't feel like the home that he had maintained for lo these many years in town. There was no intimacy. It was cold, impersonal. And then he had an idea. He jumped in his 4x4, went back to town, ascended the elevator to his favorite room in his in-town domicile, the library, where he had spent many happy, restful hours reading to his heart's content, lost within the magic of the written word. In that library, he had a favorite recliner. He'd had it for many years. It was so old that it was a little tattered, but he had spent so much time in it that it literally molded itself to his body. And every place where he zigged, the recliner zagged, and it fit like a glove. He grabbed a hold of the recliner, started to wrestle it out of the room into the elevator, stopped for a brief moment to take a tapestry from atop the hearth, the fireplace, in his favorite library. And then he wrestled the whole thing down the elevator into his vehicle, rushed out to the country, and in a mad rush, he dragged the recliner from the car into the mansion, into the new library, and gave it a place of honor right in front of the hearth, just like it had been in his comfortable accommodations of many years. One last detail. Back to the car. He gently removed the tapestry and affixed it above the fireplace. And then settled down into his favorite recliner to enjoy the book that he had been waiting for so long. The tapestry? Three words. Home, sweet home. That recliner. That memory of his happy home. That's our Shabbos Kodesh. Home, sweet home. There's no place like home. Rabbi Sai, I bid you a very happy Shabbos. This Shabbos and every Shabbos. A good Shabbos to you all.